call your mommy, your daddy, and all your friends and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app. We global, baby.
Yeah, baby!
Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.
Hello and welcome to the Secret Vibe Lounge. I'm so happy that you're here. I'm Valerie A. Campbell, your host, and I am very happy that you're here because here is the place where you get to change your vibe. So relax, grab your favorite beverage, and let's get involved. Let's start a discussion here. Let's start a conversation. So welcome to the Secret Vibe Lounge. Vibe is an acronym for vision, intention, belief, and expectation. And I tend to speak in these areas because these are the attributes that require change in order for your vibration, which is your energy in motion, to change. And the reason why I want it to change is because I want you to know that you're a powerful being and that you have the ability to create in your world, to attract everything that you need in order to enable that which you have envisioned to come to pass. So I want you to focus on what you want. I just want you to simply, in this moment, ask yourself, what do I want? And that will get you straight back into alignment. So you're now focusing on what you want with happiness and gratitude. Okay? When you're in a mode of complaint, oh, I haven't got this and I haven't got that and then da-da-da-da-da, what you're actually doing is not creating the kind of world that you want. In fact, you are creating, but you're creating the opposite of what you're really wanting. I hope that makes sense. So that's just to start you off, especially for the newcomers, the old comers, if you want to put it that way, and are accustomed to hearing this message. So today I want to engage in the conversation of narcissism. And the reason for that is because an old date, historical date, contacted me a few days ago, and I had him peddled, categorized as a narcissistic person. And he contacted me because he'd heard that I'd written the book The Difference, and he wanted to congratulate me. And I was very much aware or reminded of the experiences or how I felt in his presence, and let's just say that it wasn't very good. So I gave a hasty response and I departed quickly. And he wasn't the first narcissistic person that I had dated. So I've actually had my fair share of narcissists. I would say I've probably had the experience of dating maybe 2 to 3. But that one was definitely labeled, from my perspective and from my understanding of what a narcissist is, the fact that he lacks empathy and felt that he was always right and he would do things that are documented as the traits of a narcissist would make me put him in that pot, so to speak. So I've dealt with my fair share of narcissists. And when you look at the world as it is now, social media, I think plays a very big influence on the development of narcissists in our community. So there seems to be quite a few of them in the world. And they tend to gaslight people. Not tend to, that is one of the traits. They gaslight individuals. And what do I mean by gaslighting? Well, there was an old movie called Gaslight, and the term derives from that movie where there was this guy, and he was basically trying to make his partner go crazy. And what he would do is he would play with the lights. He would turn it on and off, and she would say, "Did you notice that? Did you notice that the lights went off?" And he'd say, "No, the lights are completely fine." So he basically turned her crazy because he made her doubt her own reality. And so that term is attributed to narcissists, to narcissistic individuals, because they tend to do things like that. They'll say things and then they'll say that they never said it. And you're like, but I know that you said that. And that is what I experienced with this one particular person that contacted me recently. He would say that he didn't say things when I knew that he did. And I remember on one particular occasion, we were having a conversation, and he said to me, "Diddy-dum, diddy-dee." And I said, "Well, actually, you did say that." And he categorically refused and said that he didn't. And the time span that he mentioned in which he said that, I knew, or we both knew, that we hadn't spoken to each other in that time span, but we had texted each other. And I said, okay. I went into my text messages, thank God for text messages, and I literally showed him the train of conversation. And I said, can you show me where in that conversation that I've just said what you just said? And he looked, and he looked again, and he looked again, and he said, I could have sworn that I said that. He was so adamant that I'd said it. I said, you just made that up. And I said, this is not the first time that you've done it. And I remember on another occasion, just out of the blue, he said to me, are you recording our conversations? And I thought, what? What sane individual? That is not a normal thing that a narcissistic person would say. Are you recording our conversations? In other words, what I felt he was trying to say to me is that he was losing his ability to gaslight me, because he felt that I would always have proof to counter what he said. So I've been gaslighted. And if you're in a situation where you're with somebody and you've been gaslighted and you recognize what I'm saying, just recognize that as one of the attributes of a narcissistic individual. And by the way, there are different degrees of narcissism. This person that I'm thinking about, that I have in mind, is what I would categorize as a highly narcissistic person. And so, you know, I've been projected onto and generally treated like I was nothing. It's funny because I know this is a horrible way to describe somebody, but I felt almost as if to go back to him, to go back in a relationship with him, would be like going back to my own vomit. That's how I feel now. At the time, I asked myself, why did I attract that type of relationship? And it was because at that time I was feeling very low. Something had happened in my life. My self-esteem was very, very low. And as the universe works, I was sending out a vibe of low self-esteem. And universe, not judging whether it's right or wrong or good or bad, said, your wish is my command. I'm going to give you more of that feeling so that you can feel more low self-esteem. You see, that's how the universe works. And so I attracted in that relationship. And then as I began my healing, because you see, that wasn't my normal state, I began to realize what was actually going on. And as I began to realize what was going on, the arguments became thicker, until I just thought, what am I doing? I was able to, you know, extract myself out of that relationship. And now I look back many years later, it's like, wow, I really was in a state of vomit, if you want to put it that way. Not a nice term, I know. So if you feel at any point that you've been treated like dog poo-poo or vomit, then you know, okay? So there's a lot of people that have experienced being treated like this. And the pain And the wake of destruction that narcissists leave their, I want to call it, victims in, can leave us to actually labeling them as bad people. So I want to put a different twist on this, because usually narcissistic people are really looked down upon. But I want us to exercise compassion here. Now, one of the ways in which I was able to experience compassion for him is because a lot of his stories had been shared to me of his upbringing. And I realized that he'd actually gone through some sort of trauma that had led him to being the way that he was, and that it wasn't actually, that trauma hadn't really resolved itself. And coupled with the fact that, if any of you have read my book as yet, The Difference, please go and get a copy of it now at www.valerieacampbell.com. In the book, I explain how I was given the medicine of the difference. In other words, I was told there's no difference between right and wrong. And I know it sounds like a crazy, illogical thing to think of, but that's what I was told as a profound truth. But what it enabled me to do, that seed of truth, it enabled me that when that seed was basically sowed into my mind, it grew fruit, it grew trees, it grew branches. And one of those significant tree trunk was that I need to suspend judgment. And so when I would listen to a person and interact with them, my mind, looking through the filter of there's no difference between right and wrong, would say, well, actually, I'm listening to you, but I'm not going to judge what you're saying to me right now as wrong or right. And in effect, what I'm actually saying is it enabled me to not judge the individual, to suspend judgment. And when you're able to suspend judgment, it then allows you to listen to the person from a place of non-judgment and seek to understand them, as opposed to labeling them as right or wrong. And that is what happened as I got older and as I began to absorb this message of the difference. What it enabled me to do is to look at things with a new perspective. Okay, because suspending the judgment, allowing myself to understand, I was now allowing myself to actually see it from a completely different angle, and allowing the Holy Spirit to reveal truths to me about this person, and to look at it from a completely different perspective. So for my old friends in this lounge, they know that my book was called, well, the preliminary name of it was called The Perspective. Then I decided to call it The Difference, which is the name that Holy Spirit originally gave me for the book. And then I leaned on my own perspective and was going to call it Perspective. However, what I realized was that you always need to go with the spirit that is within you, who knows things beyond your perspective. And so I called it The Difference, with that knowing that the outcome was a shifted perspective. So you'll always hear me interlace my conversation with the word perspective, because the way I look at it is that I was fed the medicine of the difference, and on the back end, what I got was a shifted perspective, okay, which enabled me to suspend judgment. So looking at the narcissist and looking at it from the point of view of, let me seek to understand why these people are the way they are, because I believe that people are inherently born good. This enabled me to have a less reactive behavior towards them, and to be quite calm in my demeanor, and to just kind of confidently back away from this person once I became clear what I was actually dealing with. So when we look at narcissism, when we look at the root of narcissism, as with any type of mental illness, it stems from trauma. And this person had explained things in their past which 100% for a child I would deem as highly traumatic. And so in understanding his story, this trauma was inflicted on him before his actual, in his formation years. As a child, you're still trying to form your character. And so before his character was actually defined. And it was related to his parents, this trauma, his older siblings, his brothers and his brothers, who really damaged his self-esteem. You know, they made him question who he was. And the way I see it is that he's actually not got past that trauma. He hasn't got past that trauma. I was reading an article and they compared it with somebody who is like a person who's come out of war. They're still trapped in that traumatic experience and they're dependent in that situation where they're in the bunker and they're dependent upon their survival. And they've got bullets that are whistling past their head. They're constantly in a state of heightened awareness. So if you know anybody like that, they're on this continuous high alert. They monitor the environment that they're in. They seem to be like they're on drugs, right? But obviously they're not. You go to a restaurant and they're looking all around them. Their eyes, they never sit with their back to the door. Their eyes are always on the lookout for impending danger, even though they're in an environment which is quite safe. So they're always looking out for a threat. And so I liken that to how narcissists are. In order to, they're always looking for safety. They always want to feel safe and secure. They want to keep their self-esteem intact because they're continually looking, or they've always had to somehow keep themselves intact. And in order to do that, from their perspective, that makes them right and everybody else is wrong that comes into their path. So in other words, if you do not conform to their beliefs of who they are, which in fact keeps them safe, so it's based on a deep insecurity, then you're deemed as a wrong or a bad person. So when you can see it from this perspective or understand it from their perspective, now you get to see why their behavior is in alignment with that belief that they hold. It starts to make a lot of sense. So they believe that in order for them to maintain that self-esteem that they have, that they must always be right and they must always be good and everyone else is bad and wrong. And like I said, that's absolutely critical to ensure the safety, the certainty of how they see themselves. So I found that pretty interesting when I did my research. And it made me have compassion on the individual. So to the narcissist, it doesn't actually matter to them whether their beliefs are true. What matters to them is if the beliefs that they hold enable them to feel safe. And it's always in the moment. Do these beliefs, that's like right now, do I feel safe? And whether those beliefs allow the feeling of terror that they have inside of them, which is based on them still living in that traumatic experience to quell. And it's because that trauma hasn't been integrated into them. They haven't been able to be counseled through it. So they're always, so it's like the body has grown big. They look like adults, but they're still that traumatized child inside. You know, and I can relate to it because of my experience. Anybody that knows my story, I grew up, but still held beliefs of low self-esteem, sabotaged myself, looking for love in the wrong places because of abuse as a younger child. So I can relate to it. But it doesn't mean that these people, ironically, these narcissistic people are safe to be around. Okay? Because the non-integrated trauma leads to false beliefs. And what they do is they lash out. They lash out at individuals. Sometimes people die as a result of that. There are a lot of narcissistic people in prison, or they end up in a jail cell, like I said, or, you know, they get into fights. And in the worst cases, severely traumatized people can end up going on shooting sprees. Yeah, and we've been privy to those stories. So for the narcissist, even if other people are accommodating, or they're willing or loving and they're kind, after enough of that, after enough of the lashing out, the humiliation, the contempt, being made to feel as if you're a doormat, they force those people to stay away from them. They force those people to keep a distance, or to literally just disconnect altogether, which is what my story was. I had to just literally just disconnect from this individual, because that continual thought pattern that they have, that they're the victim, it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. After everyone in their orbit, everyone in their sphere has been systematically victimized by them. Victimized. So when you think about the psyche behind the narcissistic person, then you begin to see why the behaviors make sense, because the behaviors are a match or are in alignment to the beliefs that they hold about themselves and society. And so in that light, I started to feel not contempt for them, because you can go through a range of emotions, especially when you don't understand, anger, especially when you know that you're doing your best for that person and you generally want to see that person well-being. You're looking out for that person's well-being, and they literally can't see it, and you just literally feel like you're just being trod upon over and over and over again. It's extremely hurtful. And so it feels damaging to be around that person. And so understanding, when you can understand why this person's like this, it then evokes compassion within you. And when you can evoke compassion for somebody and yet keep your distance, it allows you to maintain your own sense of well-being. And so looking at the narcissistic person, and I'm going back to the gaslighting again, because that's one of the main traits, main mischief is too light a word to describe it. It's almost as if they create an alternative reality that suits their self-narrative, because people from the outside are like, well, actually, that never happened. You're looking at the situation completely wrong. But from their perspective, whether it's true or not, it keeps them safe. That belief keeps them safe, whatever it is that they're holding. Now, I find that narcissists treat people in two different ways. People who support them, in other words, the ones that are like servants to them, the ones that they can walk over like doormats, the ones that are, when I say servants, I mean like excessively serve them, you know, that they can boss around, do this, do that, do this. They always seem to be wanting something. At the time, I remember calling this person a vampire because it was almost like they wanted to suck my blood, like everything that I had, they wanted to suck the living daylights out of me. Because what they do is they go after people, or should I say attract people who are givers. You see, because they want to take and take and take and take. So a person who is a giver is a perfect match for them. Especially if your self-esteem is low at that point in your life and you're vulnerable, you are the perfect match to a narcissistic person. So don't beat yourself up about it. But just understand that this is the cycle of a narcissistic person and that you can't change them. It's not your job to change them. Okay, these people need help. They need professional counseling. So they have those people who are like servants to them, okay, and they're put in the good category, the people that they can feed off of. And then they have those who do not agree with their narrative, and they'll be put in, be placed into the bad category. And this is needed to create an illusion of certainty about their reality so that they can have that absolute control. And I know that, you know, you might think, well, everybody likes to have control, but it's in the narcissistic person, it is massively amplified. Massively. So when you think again about the narcissistic person, again thinking of this individual, they like to see themselves as almost godlike, almost as if they want to be praised. They want to be continually praised. They cannot stand critique. And the reason they cannot stand critique is because they always feel that they're right. It's a constant clinging onto their self-esteem. These are deeply insecure people. So they give the bravado as if they're not, but in fact, they are. You know, they tell everyone that they're the smartest. They want to be seen as the smartest. Or they'll say that everyone tells me that I'm brilliant. And they come across as very charming and engaging people. But behind the closed doors, you start to see the chinks in the armor. And that's what's actually dangerous about narcissistic people. When you're looking at them from the outside, no one would think anything bad of them. It's like, this person is absolutely lovely. But when you get close enough, you start to see these little examples, these little, oof, gosh, that didn't feel right. This lack of empathy. It'll come out in their conversation and you'll think, something's not right here. Something's not right. I remember with my one, I actually had to find myself going to Google the first time. I was looking for something and I couldn't put my hands on what it was. And then I remember finding myself going back and thinking, imagine I'm going out with someone, but I'm finding as if I need to research this character trait. And as I put my fingers on the keyboard, the word empathy came out of my fingers. And I thought, that's it. This person lacks empathy. The inability to see it from another person's perspective. Let me give you an example. Like, and this wasn't an actual thing that happened, but just to give you an analogy of what I mean. So if you imagine a person's had, imagine he's eaten, just had a free square meal, you know, you had a three course meal. And you wouldn't necessarily say that to somebody who you know is absolutely starving. Oh, I've just had this delicious three course meal, knowing that person hasn't eaten for maybe two days. And that's what I meant by a lack of empathy, the inability to. And I know that sounds extreme, that's an extreme example, but little signs like this, follow your gut. Okay, don't ignore it. Don't ignore the red flags that you see pop up. Okay, your red flags, your intuition, they're there to assist you. Okay, the red flags are the bits, or should I say your subconscious, coming up to show you that your conscious hasn't really fully realized, but the subconscious sees it. Okay, so the narcissistic person likes to be seen as the genius, the best person in the room, cannot take critique, and I'm talking about even constructive critique. It doesn't seem to sink in. And they find it very difficult to reveal insecurity and fear, but it's rooted in the severe trauma that they experienced as a child growing up. And so once you actually see this about this person, going back to the difference and having that medicine within me and now looking at it through a fresh light, suspending judgment and able to see this about this person, or at large narcissistic people, you realize now that it's not actually personal. You don't have to
call your mommy, your daddy, and all your friends and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app, we global, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.